I don't do it.
Saturday is not a surprise.
Okay. You're starting. I'm sure most people are familiar. Yossi, you probably better than anybody else are familiar with the famous Kastner case, right? For those of you who require a little bit of chazara beforehand, we give you here what I thought was a very good rundown of it. Well, I'll quickly skim it. The story of Rudolf Yisrael Rejo Kastner, depending on what you like to call him, born in 1906, right? Came from Cluj in Transylvania, right? Made his way over, became a big Zionist. 1940, moved to Budapest and became the deputy chairman of the Hungarian Zionist Association. 1942, helped found the Relief and Rescue Committee. Just remember, 1942, the Holocaust is
well underway,
except for in
Hungary,
right?
Because the Admiral Horthy's government was in power. Mm-hmm,
right. So at this point, and in fact, at this point, he, in fact, even being in Hungary, is very active in saving Jews from outside of Hungary. March 1944, the Germans invaded Hungary. Deportations to Auschwitz began almost immediately. The committee changed its focus and chose to use means previously unthinkable for Jews during the Holocaust. Kastner and other members of the committee negotiated directly with the SS in hopes of saving Hungarian Jewry. Initially, the committee offered to collect $2 million in exchange for a cessation of the deportations. When that didn't work, a new plan was hatched. The Blood for Goods bargain presented by Adolf Eichmann stipulated that the deportation would stop if the United States and Britain would supply the Germans with 10,000 trucks and other equipment for use on the Eastern Front. This deal, too, would never materialize. In the interim, Kastner devised a new rescue operation. The Kastner train, as it became known, would save members of Hungary's Jewish community. Kastner negotiated with SS officer Kurt Becher, who represented SS chief Heinrich Himmler, right to the top. With the war on the East Front escalating, German resources were nearing depletion, and Himmler saw this train as a potential bargaining chip that could be used in negotiation with the Western Allies. What was his plan? Again, he's saying, I'm not going to use it to fight against you on the Western Front. I'm going to use it to fight against the Russians. And in fact, as we'll see later on, the deal was, if you give me what you want, at one point they agreed to shut down Auschwitz. And if you can't trust the Nazis, who can you trust?
Saying whose idea was that, to shut down Auschwitz?
That was an offer made by Eichmann.
For real?
We'll see. Among those selected by Kastner and the committee to board the train were rabbis, including the future Samar Rebbe Yoel Teitelbaum, whose community was almost entirely wiped out during the Holocaust, which he would rebuild practically from scratch in Brooklyn. A miraculous job. Zionist leaders, members of the Jewish intelligentsia, and Kastner's friends and family, totally 1,685 passengers. The train left Budapest on June 30, 1944, and ultimately reached neutral Switzerland after being held hostage in Bergen-Belsen for 7 months in two groups in August and December. Back in Hungary, Kastner continued to work on behalf of the country's Jews for the duration of the war, and his negotiation led to 20,087 Jews being sent to work in Strassow, Austria, instead of Auschwitz. 70% of those Jews survived the war. In addition, he provided aid to Jewish prisoners in the camps, making it possible for many to survive. Now, let's just think about this for a moment. Of the 20,000, 15,000 survived. In Auschwitz, maybe 10% survived. Right? So we're talking about 15,000 versus 2,000. That means 13,000 lives were saved by him with this move. Another 1,600 were saved by the train. And also he did other things as well. So approximately we can say that this guy saved 15,000 lives during the Holocaust. There aren't many people who can give numbers like that. It would seem that we would call such a person a hero. Kastner immigrated to Palestine in 1947 with his wife and young daughter and became a prominent figure in Israeli political life. He served as an official in David Ben-Gurion's Maipai government and edited the party's Hungarian language newspaper, as well as another Hungarian paper that had been reestablished in Tel Aviv. Then in 1952, Malkiel Grunwald, a Hungarian Jewish survivor living in Jerusalem, distributed leaflets accusing Kastner of collaborating with the Nazis. As a member of the government, Kastner was told he should participate in the state's court case against Grunwald in order to clear his own name. According to Grunewald, Kastner had agreed not to inform Hungarian Jews about or to weigh them in Auschwitz in exchange for those saved in the Kastner train. Kastner insisted that he... No, that's on the computer. Kastner insisted he did his best to save Hungarian Jewry. The lawyer for the defense, a sharp right-wing Israeli named Shmuel Tamir, managed to turn the table on the Israeli government, forcing Kastner to defend himself against the range of charges that went beyond his failure to disclose what he knew about Auschwitz and the fate of Hungarian Jewry. According to Tamir, Kastner negotiated with Nazis for personal benefit, saving family members and friends, and sharing in the Jewish booty confiscated by Becher. Kastner was also accused of testifying in defense of Becher during the Nuremberg trials. Interestingly, he denied it. Interestingly, it was true.
He did testify.
He did testify, right? It's odd how he thought he could deny that. The high profile, second only to Eichmann's in terms of garnering national attention, right? Yessi, I'm sure you can testify to that. And Israel's first court case about Holocaust took months, right? This was, of course, before the Eichmann was captured. Eventually, the presiding judge declared that by negotiating with the Nazis, Kastner had sold his soul to the devil. Grunewald was found not guilty of almost all charges against him. Kastner chose to resign from his position as a government employee. It got worse, right, because Kastner became skipping down to represent the flaws of Ben-Gurion. In March 1957, 3 years after the case ended, three members of Israeli extreme right assassinated Kastner. Less than a year later, the Israeli Supreme Court overturned its original verdict, citing Kastner's extraordinary efforts and achievements in saving Hungarian Jewry during the war. So, approximately 1954, he is found guilty by the district court. 1957, he is killed. 1958, the decision of the district court is overturned by the Supreme Court. And, of course, this remains a question in Israeli minds to this day. What was Kastner? Decades later, the dispute continues to linger in Israel's consciousness. Was Kastner a hero or a villain?
By the way, Kastner's granddaughter is now minister in Israeli government. She's the minister of transportation. Her name is Merab Michaeli.
Really?
So, yeah.
Because Kastner had one daughter, and that daughter, Merab Michaeli. Now.
It's the fact that she.
I knew he had married.
Interesting. Something that, again, I enjoy working on the Shurim because they give me an opportunity to do a fair amount of research. In December 1960, after Eichmann was caught, Eichmann wrote a two-part article entitled Eichmann's Own Story in Life magazine.
Is this in
number
two. Number one.
Oh, what?
Number one. So, right? Eichmann, in an article entitled To Sum It Up, I Regret Nothing. What? Wait.
It gets worse.
Right? He takes opportunity and in doing this, he actually gives his side of the Kastner story. Interesting that this was such a major part for him. And he tells his side of the story. And he says as follows. Only Heinrich Himmler could have turned off that should be the liquidation machine. It was 1944, the year of the assassination attempt on Hitler, when the Reichsführer Himmler took over as commander of the reserve army. They authorized me to propose a change. 1 million Jews for 10,000 winterized trucks with trailers. The world of Jewish nation could decide for itself what Jews it wanted to choose. We asked only that they give us 10,000 trucks. Thanks to Himmler's directive, I could assure them on my word of honor that these trucks would be used only on the Eastern Front. As I said at the time, with 10,000 winterized trucks with trailers are here, the liquidation machine in Auschwitz will be stopped. In obedience to Himmler's directive, I now concentrate on negotiations with Jewish political officers in Budapest. One man stood out among them, Dr. Rudolf Kastner, authorized representative of the Zionist movement. This Dr. Kastner was a young man about my age, an ice-cold lawyer and a fanatical Zionist. He agreed to help keep the Jews from resisting deportation, even kept order in the collection camps if I would close my eyes and let a few hundred or even a few thousand young Jews emigrate illegally to Palestine. It was a good bargain for keeping order in the camps. The price, 15,000 to 20,000 Jews, and then there may have been more, was not too high for me. Except for after the first few sessions, Kastner never came to me fearful of the Gestapo strongman. We negotiated entirely as equals. People forget that. We were political opponents trying to arrive at a settlement. We trusted each other perfectly. When he was with me, Kastner smoked cigarettes as though we were in a coffee house. While we talked, he would smoke one aromatic cigarette after another, taking them from a silver case and lighting them with a little silver lighter. With his great polish and reserve, he had made an ideal Gestapo officer himself. Dr. Kastner's main concern was to make it possible for a select group of Hungarian Jews to emigrate to Israel. But the Arrow Cross Hungarian Fascist Party had grown strong and stubborn. Its inspectors printed no exception to the mass deportations. So the Jewish officials turned to the German occupation authorities. They realized that we were specialists who had learned about Jewish affairs through the years of practice. As a matter of fact, there was a very strong attitude and the viewpoint of these immensely ideal Zionist leaders were afraid there might be the last battle. As I told Kastner, we too are idealists, and we too had to sacrifice our own blood before we came to power. I believe that Kastner would have sacrificed 1,000 or 100,000 of his blood to achieve his political goal. He was not interested in old Jews or those who had become assimilated into Hungarian society, but he was incredibly persistent in trying to save biologically valuable Jewish blood, that is, human material that was capable of reproduction and hard work. You can have the others, he would say, but let me have this group here. McCork has done us a great service by helping keep the deportation camps peaceful. I will let his groups escape. After all, I was not concerned with small groups or of 1,000 or so Jews.
It sounds, it's a possibility at least, that what he was saying was an aid to smear Kastner because it could cause trouble in Israel between factions, which anybody who's read Perfidy knows.
Right, so yeah, so Kastner clearly does not.
And also to make himself look better, that here, look, I'm dealing. I'm not, and yet there's more to this story than is possible in even notes of this length.
Right, so obviously this plays up to the idea that this very much plays into the perfidy idea that, you know, the Zionists weren't interested in the old Jews, they wanted the young, healthy ones. It definitely goes along with that. That's for sure. I am not the one who's saying, yeah, listen, I haven't said so. How can it be wrong? That wouldn't be a very good argument. In fact, Life magazine themselves, in their editorial of this issue, raised the issues that are eating at you. Here, this is the first two paragraphs of their editorial. The sickening confession of Adolf Eichmann, concluded in this issue, is a major historical document, but why read it? Some people can't bear to be reminded that these crimes happened in our own era or to face the puzzle of the hideous personality that perpetrated them. Others recall from his self-arrogant justification his "I regret nothing," his little cog in the machinery plea. But we believe it is healthier to look this monster in the face and hear him out, for the lesson he personifies applies to every man in time. It is easy enough to find the irrational features in his self-damning story. Certainly, it is not to be assumed that he is telling the whole truth. He is proud of his part in killing millions of Jews, but equally insists that he is not anti-Semitic. He is proud of his mutually respected full dealings with his fellow idealist, the Zionist Dr. Kastner, but equally proud of never having had a drink with a Jew. He boasts equally of his officially in his business of murder and his disapproval of sadism. He is totally unrepentant in the shell of a good Nazi form. But this irrationality is not freakish achievement of a single neurotic named Eichmann. It has afflicted in some degree a whole generation of civilized men. So they addressed your issues. They want to address, should this be published at all? A. And B, they themselves say, why would you believe a word that this man's saying?
So if they are doubting if they should publish, why would they publish? Because of historic reasons, they want to
know right exactly
how a Nazi thinks and acts.
It's not only news in this case; it is, as he said, an historical document that forever will be remembered for his rationalization of his actions.
The way these Nazis rationalized what they were doing—they were great people. They were bargaining. They were nice.
They were idealists.
They were trying to save some Jews. They were trying.
The truth be told, I am surprised that this article, I had not heard of this article before I dug it up recently. I'm surprised. Life magazine had a two-part interview with Eichmann. That's noteworthy.
Did you read the whole thing?
I read the whole thing.
Anything else stand out for you?
This is what I thought that we should.
I think they directed the world to see what a crazy guy, how sickening this guy was.
The hate is so deep. It is so.
Right, so it's just fascinating. But again, I bring out this part because this we're talking today about Kastner, and this is what's relevant to Kastner. Right, we're not here to discuss Eichmann today.
In the country during the trial, it's just unbelievable.
Right,
it was 27 or 8 years after the country was established. A lot of Holocaust
not even six
still alive. Yeah. People fainted every day. They were showing it on. They were. It was
the Eichmann trial. Or
yeah,
Kastner.
The Eichmann trial was followed. The Eichmann trial would follow. It was covered most notably by Hannah Arendt, and her articles appeared in the New Yorker and became the basis for the banality of evil.
Right. Correct.
But it was also televised.
Correct. But right now we're talking about Kastner. We're talking about, that is the focus today. So on the one hand, yes, there is no reason for me to believe anything that Eichmann says.
No.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
Right? But, you know, I could hear the argument. I'm not making the argument, but I'm saying I could hear the argument that there are parts that are there that really don't relate to Eichmann. Don't make him look better. They don't make him look worse.
They equalize evil.
Right. Correct. But you know,
which, by the way, in the Ivan Demyanov trial, which I attended in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. they did the same thing. They kept saying that the Jew, like the Sunker commandos, were the equivalent, and so on.
Right.
And I know I saw people who fell for it, mm-hmm. and I do consider it they fell for it.
Now, what I like, there's two things I'd like to bring out of the trial tonight that are a little bit different than the usual view of things. I was amazed to see that the decisions that were written, again, there are two Kastner decisions. There's the district court decision, and then there is the Supreme Court decision. The district court decision is 300 pages long. The Supreme Court response is an additional 200 pages, right? There are 500 pages of decision, which is mind-boggling, on Kastner. So I'd like to pull out two parts of the decisions. Again, I've got more time in the summer to prepare shiurim. I have the ability to track down these things and then read large chunks of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the first part, which amazed me, is I don't know the people who wrote it. The first one was Binyamin Halevi.
Binyamin Halevi became later a Supreme Court judge.
Right. Was he an Ish Dati?
So, Masorati.
He's Masorati, right?
What is
Masorati? Traditional.
It's like a very observant conservative Jew from the 50s.
Traditional. He's traditional.
He was knowledgeable. He must have learned.
Right. But what about Shulam Yom Kippur?
Yeah.
Right. That's.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Probably went to shul on Yom Kippur.
I see.
That's again, but it's not Menachem Elul. Right, you know, this is what we're talking about. And the Supreme Court justice was a fellow Agranat. Agranat beforehand was a judge in Louisville, Kentucky. Oddly enough.
He's American?
He became the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not the same thing as the Supreme Court of the United States. There are major differences in structure, right?
No.
The supreme is supreme.
Well, right? I mean...
It is the final word.
But it's not, for instance, they're not lifetime appointed, is my understanding.
They are lifetime appointed.
You do?
Mm-hmm. So what's amazing is among the things that came out was a fight over halacha. They actually, in these decisions, which again, this is not a Beis Din, right, this is a secular court, right, a district and Supreme Court, right, found it necessary to discuss the halachic ramifications of what Kastner did. And a lot of what they say is what we have been discussing through Barenblatt, through the Judenrat up until now. It's amazing how much comes out in the case. So in the Psak Din from Binyamin HaLevi, he talks about Halacha Yehudit. Right? This is section 64 of the decision. Echad Mishol Sha'aver Sheyehudi Mitzuvah Sheyeharig Lo Yavor Aleihem Hu Shfichas Damim. Tells us that one of the three cardinal sins that a person is forced to give their life for rather than violate it is to kill someone. Afil b'matzav shel bikuach nefesh, also adam b'yisor ratzas nafshe yedei shfichas damo shel adam chaf mipesha. No matter what, I can't save my life with the life of another innocent person. As it says, my choses de damo didach sumak tvei, dilma damo tahu gavra sumak tvei. Quotes is the Gemara from Pesachim and Sanhedrin, and he translates, Mara Isa Shedamcha Ta Adam Yoser, Shema Dama Shosa Isha Adam Yoser. Who said your blood is greater than his blood? What gives you the right to save your life at the cost of his life? Kamokin also Rahatza Adam Acher De Shvichas Dama Shal Adam Acher Hachat Mi Pesha. I can't save your life using his life. Same idea. And Dochen Nefesh Mipde Nefesh. Quotes the Meshin and all of us. Right? We've seen these all starts appearing here. Not only that, also gamahatzel adam echad o afilu rabim al yadei haskaras adam acher hachaf mi pesha bidei rotzeach. I can't even save many people by giving over the life of somebody who is innocent, as we said in last week's. Siyos b'nei adam shayim mahalchim b'derech u'pagul lahem goyim v'amru tnu lanu echad mikem v'nara goso v'imrav hari anu hargim es kulchem afilu kulam nerogim lo yimsa nefesh achas mi Yisrael. Close to Yerushalmi, close to Tosefta. We've discussed the differences between them. But the bottom line is, if a group of bandits say, give over one of you, or pick out one to give us, we're going to kill you all, we all go down together. That's the Rambam's approach to it, which is also the Shulchan Aruch. Afra tzaras hatzaras rov hakol also lahaskir muat. Say many, you can't give over a few. He says, and what if, in order to save a few, I gave over everybody else? That person should even be put to death. So what's he saying? In order for Kastner to save his few friends and his family, he gave over the entire Hungarian Jewry.
How do you figure that?
I am just reading the decision of the district court. This is not my opinion. I am reading the opinion of the district court.
I don't understand where they get that.
Because he did.
Let's read on.
The judge's writing. That I understand. But from the story of Kastner, that's not what I hear.
So let's go on. You have two more paragraphs where I give you this. Obviously, there's another 300 pages if you want to read it in toto.
How did you miss that? It was there.
Right.
He chose to hand over people like old people, disabled people.
I heard the negotiation.
Religious people.
He chose to hand over. He chose to fight for the young.
Okay, but that's... It's the same thing.
So let's.
It was not your discussion last week on the cards.
The status quo is that everyone was going to die.
Exactly.
It goes back to the same discussion as last week.
If you do nothing, everyone dies. Exactly. If you do something, someone is saved.
He's actively saving people.
He's a hero. He is a hero. He got it with
that. I don't know if he's a hero or a villain, but people lived who would have otherwise died on account
because of him.
Right. Well, that is.
And not a lot of people can say that they did that, especially to over 10,000 people.
And
I call that significant.
Is this any different than the case last week with the white cards where you chose
Obviously, we're going from one to the other. That's what we're saying. Now, again, the difference here, in my mind, is he's in much better shape than they are because the people with the white cards were saving their own lives. Kastner was never in danger, it would seem, right? Kastner never put himself on the train.
Sounds like.
Right? Kastner, of all the Jews in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, he was probably in the top five in the best shape. This is a guy who was waltzing in and smoking with Eichmann, right? I think we could, that much we can believe was true.
Schindler guy.
What?
A little like Schindler.
No.
Right, Shindler wasn't.
No, but the point.
The way he carried himself, et cetera, sounds Schindler-esque to me.
Right, so let's first complete this piece of the decision that I'm giving you here. He writes, "A nemi ba lifso halacha lefi Rambam im kasna his gibim lo muvan hamila not tano masar." I'm not saying that he gave them over, right? Halevi says, "As yude kruj v'la'achir biyad rotzeach mamish." I'm not saying he actually gave them over. Achli mirish es nagusto ser kasna bepashas hakruj, right? V'lo bepashas kruj belvad einin oshon bichina musarit siburit avni. I don't see that there is any different ethically, morally, or legally than had he given them over. Right? Again, according, if you're going to follow what Eichmann said, then in fact he was involved in making sure everyone was calm, everything was going smoothly, making sure that the deportation camps kept moving well. What's the difference between that and giving him over, Halevi
is saying? So what you're saying is that like me, Halevi is saying it's really the same.
That's what Halevi is saying? Exactly. He thinks it's
wrong.
Okay.
I'm going up with
him.
You're wrong.
Okay. Let's just make it personal while we can.
His verdict was overturned.
Right. Don't worry. Yes, it is number four.
The benefit of history on my side and the hindsight.
Right.
But it's clear whether they went quietly or not, whether they cooperated or not, that we're all going to die. And by virtue of what Kastner did, some were.
Well, Rabbi, there is the question of 10,000 people. Did he actually say?
So again, 1,685 he actually saved. Right?
We know
right.
that.
Then sure. There's another 20,000 that were supposed to go to Auschwitz, and instead he got them sent to a work camp,
uh-huh.
And 15,000 of those survived.
Okay.
Right?
Claim being, in effect, a net gain of 13,000.
Right.
Because probably
90%
statistically 2,000
right.
would have survived.
Correct. That's
Rabbi,
that's.
So we know for sure that 13,000 did survive.
Again, I know 15,000 survived. That I'm likely the majority of them wouldn't have survived if it wasn't for him. Again, I'm not a prophet. I can't tell you what would have happened.
Because there
right?
was a woman, an Israeli, who I knew here when I first came back to Denver. She was friends with Alka and her mother. And the mother was on that train in Hungary and said the people who, after the war, who were against Kastner were because their families were not safe.
Yeah.
So they went after him. And
I imagine.
But he didn't, but that.
Right, right.
I
psychologically understand where they're coming from. Let's just finish off this piece. What's it like? It's like somebody who is a guard who is approached by the enemy in the middle of the night. He says, your camp is totally surrounded. And we're going to attack and we're going to kill everybody. Even if you set off the alarm and you wake everyone, the overall majority is going to get it. We have outnumbered you, etc., and you're surrounded. He said, I'll tell you what, we're not looking to make this messy. I'll give you 10 of your friends. You pick your 10 best friends. You can leave with them, and you don't set off the alarm. How's that for a deal? He gives a list of his best friends. And he says, you got a deal. They're men of their word. They say they kill everyone except for those 10. This guard in the end, will have turned his back on his friends, on his job. He would have been an accomplice to the enemy. And he in fact was helped in destroying everybody. That is the argument of Halevi. So Halevi says
about Kasdan.
Correct. This was the opinion of Halevi, right? 4 years later, the appeal comes through.
Kasdan's already dead.
Kasdan, as we said, is already dead at this point for a few months. And we say as follows. This is in the middle of a very long piece. And he says, Alai Lahosif, Agrinat says, Shemaskanos Eloi Mechonot Lo Kayim Nakum HaChos Halchit HaYehudis. Shabbat Tamachanos Yosef. He says, I think besides everything yet, his halachic presentation is wrong. Right? It's a fascinating discussion. Shabbat Tamachanos Yosef. He based everything on this halacha. Vaf Ein Chashivos LeDugma Shomer HaMachane Shekisher Einenu. And this parable of the guard that he puts us also nothing to do with anything. Tamtisa shalos halacha ish ein dochem nefesh mipnei nefesh. Said, what do you tell me? We don't choose one. We don't kill one person to save another. We saw the munach harayin shel ha'adam dam chasumak yoter. Right? Ha'im is your blood any redder? Kasher ba adam lifnei ravav shelosa mayaseh. He said, well, let's say we went to Ravel, made this comment, and asked him the following question. This is how, you know, I guess, lawyers talk lundis. So, Sar Echad wrote to Lahargo, Vim lo yarag hu es ploni, heshivir Ravel, we talk hu, v'lo tik tol, maichas diamach di dach sumar tvei. Diamo damata hu gavar sumar tvei. Said, I'm supposed to be killed, but I can save myself with someone else's life. So Ravel would say, you can't do that. Come on, tziri harag v'ata al taharog. How do you know who's better? He said, "By Zeh Hadavar Boli Lain Ki Alach Amura So Veves Kula Al Hamikra Shabo Medes Bifnei Adam Habreira Shall Bitzua O Ibitzua Maisa Alimus Mamish Kapa Mishlo Shol Asalom Beino Omer Lasos Lo Kol Haragano Kafmi Pesha." Of course, the question is, can I hurt someone who doesn't deserve it to save myself? Kashi Eino Roa Lefun of Derech Achiras LaHatzilas Asal Misakanos Achaim Miyadis Merchevso. Even if I see no other way of saving my life. But Tzura Zahutzka v'nidona habaya hazos kam b'sovos philosophias mishpati sh'umas olam b'osa tzura amda l'diyan mishpat ha'angli. And with this he goes through philosophical discussions of it, and he goes through British law about it, etc. We skip that. However, he says, ha'mikra sh'lefaneinu shona l'chalutin. But the Kasdan case is actually unrelated to this. Hol v'ikar habaya kanu im afas ha'maisa shal kasdan l'gaba yehudi kuz yose arei hasadeh. He knew also some Ayadiosh Auschwitz Hamakushis, Kamokav, Keras Mari, Biosif Shom Haobi, De Rotzachan Nazi. The question is the fact that he never told these communities about what was going to happen in Auschwitz, is that the same as giving them over to the Nazis?
No.
Right? Halevi thought yes.
But it's also.
Okay. L'shem Atzalos Miyutim. And the reason he did that in order to save a few. He said, Halevi realized this was a problem. And he got up and he said, I'm not saying that he actually gave them over. What did Kastner owe the Hungarian Jewish community? This was mentioned by Shlomo last week, I believe. Right? The famous Gemara in Bava Metzia. Right? Two people are walking in the desert, and there's only one canteen of water. Right? Im shosim shayem mesim, im shosim echem mehem magir yishav, darash ben betura mutav shayishtu shtem v'yamusu v'al yireh echem mehem misoso shel chavero. Famous opinion of ben betura, let them both die. However, we follow Rabbi Akiva. First, you take care of yourself before you kill yourself with it. But Mara al shtei seifim tomech ech achad ha'am. You don't usually hear him discussed here. But Moshe shall be Akiva. B'nimuku shall mutelas chov amusar shall ploni lasos l'shem atzol zulaso. Kasher be'itav shall ma'ase zeh yikapeh chayev hu. This yasul mikra shabbat b'fnei rahu omer hu. You are yadavar hafok shabbat adam v'shalom. Ploni yotzeli harig. V'ani yochol ratzilo b'sisi nafshi tachtav ma'ase. Let's say someone went to Rav and he asked a reverse question. They're taking that guy out to be killed. If I offer myself, they'll kill me instead. What would the answer be?
You still can't do that.
I can't do what?
You can't offer your life up like that.
I'm definitely not obligated to do it, right? Right? It's not a matter of maybe his blood is redder, obviously, but maybe my blood is redder, right? Why would I do that? Are you crazy? Go kill yourself. Why do you assume that he's more valuable than you? Same idea. Why would you assume?
But in reverse. And it's also, right. It's like preventing a suicide to say that.
So he says, may I mesir shall yedias alshus mahige kluj v'harim achirus below od elosh davze ola lechagel v'masa metal shniel in my natsim. Well, if he says, so if I would have told them over, what damage would have been done? Damage would have been done is that probably would have blown up the whole plan. V'sherak bo ra sikoi lemirut rubim shall yitzol Hungaria. And remember, he was planning, he got 1600 and change out. Right, 1685. On his earlier plans, he could have saved 1 million. Right, there was plans down there. What? Right, he could have saved the entire Hungarian Jewry.
My guess is he started there, trying that.
Right, obviously. Again, we said first he tried that. Then, right, first he tried the $2 million. Then he tried the 10,000 trucks. Right then, so he said that. Why would he blow that up at this point? Right. He did not have any obligation to tell this information. And he had the right to determine, is it better for the entire Jewish community that they do know this or they don't know this? He said, the end of what Halevi says, that this is no worse than, no different than giving it over. He goes together, and he gives his mashal, right? His mashal is the guy who's doing it. He says, that mashal is totally wrong. Kastner is not like the guard at all. Two reasons. They never made an offer to him like this. Choose this or that. Right? That's not what happened. He on his own was trying to save people. That's A. And two, again, we'll just skip ahead a little bit. He says the bottom line is that besides everything else, also remember that unlike the guard who has a duty, he had no duty. Right? He turned his back on his job. He had no job.
Do we look at this case based on success rate?
So again, the way they look at the way the Supreme Court looked at this was, did he have a legal obligation to tell anybody anything?
Right. Let's see. No one would have been there. For some reason, even after everything he planned, not one child would have been there. Then, he wouldn't have accomplished anything. He would have been pulling. He could have argued he was pulling out more people.
No, again. If that would have happened, he would have, in hindsight, he would have made the wrong decision. You know, it's like the question, like we're on the 10th floor, and I say, yes, let's go downstairs, right? So he says, okay, I'm going to take the steps. And I said, steps take so long, I'm going to take the window, right? And I jump out the window, and he goes down the stairs. Now, Now
you both get there,
right? Right. I happen to land in a truck full of cotton, and Yitzhak slips on the way down. Who was right? Right.
But that's exactly
right. You know, if it would have worked out, it's you could still defend the decision. You know, it's not totally based on how things work out.
Was there a guarantee that everyone? But he said there were 7 people to the coordinate. Wasn't it a guarantee that these people were?
There was no guarantee. Of course, there was no guarantee.
There was no guarantee anyway. He was taking his best shot.
He's taking his best shot.
Dancing with the devil, absolutely. The reality is that everyone.
Right. Right. So, yeah, that.
And Yitzhak says there's a net gain. Yeah, he has a point.
Why the question
according
to us,
Yitzhak
is the they
want
to give the
money
to the
right.
One of the items, and especially in right, Hungary, so again, it's not interest. Just here. He was working very hard to maintain calm,
right?
Because he was worried about a revolt.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I'm saying. And
in fact, one came in Warsaw.
Mm-hmm.
I assume,
what was the date of the Warsaw Ghetto? 44. And when are we talking now?
44.
Right. So again, that happened beforehand.
No, but the point is. If anything, Eichmann had learned from that, mm-hmm. which is not enough.
Right. So yeah. So it's a fascinating discussion here, and there's not again in the hundreds of pages. Yes, there are major disagreements about facts, but what we're focusing is not a disagreement on facts. Right? This is a disagreement, philosophical, moral, legal, halachic, right? Discussion as to whether it was right or not. So that's one point that I wanted to bring out. A second point is another fascinating thing that I did not realize is that there is a great overlap between the story of Kastner and Chana Senesh. Right? So a large part of this decision...
You're going to speak about that because I don't know what you're referring to.
A large part of this decision is Kastner's involvement or lack of involvement in the Chana Senesh. Chana Senesh... What? Chana Senesh, part of it's in there. Chana Senesh is one of the great heroines of Israel.
Right.
Right? To this day, school children learn about the story of Chana Senesh.
Learn about her in Olpan.
Right.
Translate stories about her.
Right. So again, we'll just do the beginning of number 6, even though we haven't done number 5, because it gives us an interesting there. This is a court case decided in 1999. We'll get back to it to discuss why we got here. Chana Senesh, born in Budapest, Hungary in 1921, emigrated to mandatory Palestine alone at the age of 18. In 1943, during World War II, she enlisted in the British Army. In June 1944, Chana Senesh parachuted in Yugoslavia and crossed the border to Hungary with the aid of partisan groups. The German army captured her almost immediately. Chana Senesh was executed by German firing squad on November 8, 1944.
But she had been tortured.
That's true.
To the mass.
Right.
And she still encouraged people when they would give her a break and get outside or however and say, oh no, everything's okay. Just
right. So again, the story is that there's a certain code that she had, and as the story is told, she never gave over that code. No matter how much they tortured her, right, she never gave over the code.
But is that when they blew up the revolt in Auschwitz, and they blew up the crematorium.
Well, she wasn't in Auschwitz.
No, but I don't think there was revolt. I think you're thinking about the Treblinka.
Right. Right. So, well, so the answer is no. No, it wasn't that point. So this is Chana Senesh. Chana Senesh is again, as Jeff points out, you go on Old Pond, etc. This is one of the stories that we hold out of this brave, brave young woman who actually she was working both for the British government and for the Jewish agency at the same time. And
who supposedly were on the same side. This was not a hidden double agent. This was a known double agent to
right.
both sides
right.
with the agreement of both sides.
Correct, because they were both against the common enemy of Germany. Right. According to the decision, with the discussion, Chana Senesh was supposed to go to Hungary and meet with Rudolf Kastner. Rudolf Kastner was the rendezvous person. And among the arguments they had against Kastner was Kastner knew she wasn't there. Kastner knew she was in prison. Kastner had power, and Kastner never did anything to get her out.
No, not to defend Kastner. But the fact is, at that point in the war, as we pointed out, they're taking a best shot. That's the term I use. He probably did not rethink he could get her out. And so it wasn't worth the effort. I'm not so sure that he was wrong either in that case on this point.
So again, we go number five is again these. I'm not going to give you the back and forth. I'm just going to give you the Supreme Court decision here, which discusses Maskanas Isha Kastner Gila Choser Maas Binin She Shechura Shal Chana Senesh. Gamana Ba'arachim Lipol Roshem Kach. Said he pointed out that you know one of the examples of the fact that he didn't do what he could do is the case of Chana Senesh. Because he didn't want her out because she would have made trouble for him with his relationship with the SS. January 1944. He knew from the Jewish agency that she was coming. This proves that he was working with the Nazis. So Agrinat says, I don't buy it at all. And he goes through the entire discussion. He says, let's assume that he really did do nothing. We don't really know. He said, even if you tell me that he did nothing and he stopped other people from helping her, he says, the bottom line is that does not make him having done something illegal. But the argument being that is that you do not have to help somebody legally. It might be the right thing to do, but to say that he had a legal obligation, right? And he goes through. So he says the argument is that he made his decision that for the big picture, this is what has to happen.
I can't help her.
Right.
He may have been wrong, but. Once again, he's
everything is a calculated risk. Right. Here.
So he says now in the second to last paragraph, you know, they don't let him off the hook totally. He says, "Oh, Isarati may have died. Don't think I'm ignoring the fact." He had people been Yanosha Khanshan Shayim Alava Gam has Nahogadola Mitam cast of Khare Vada. Well, Bikri also a figure Pamach's base. So it tells me they couldn't have visited her at some point. They never sent a package with food or some support. Well, meanwhile, they didn't hire a lawyer for her. Right, by Emza October, Gershom Shal Yehudi Budapest, Rino Lealis, Pilosos, or Castel, Lashem, Niosom, Shal Says, Stay Hasakonos, Harifa, celebrating the name. He was really very busy at the time, you know. He was, this was a very bad time. Afal Pichin, Enrim, Sobakat, Sidak, Malola, Indian, has Nahamura, Imzos, Gambari, Noha, Hamamas, Fizitivi, Lasos, Castel, Lashem, Shikra, Shosha, Tsan Hanim, Shin, Regalos, also Indian, Social, Shitabula, Mitsida. Listen, maybe he should have done more for them. I heard there's two other paratroopers as well. Perhaps they should have done something to help them. He said, but that just because you didn't do enough to help them does not make you a collaborator. Yes.
If you know, I don't understand Hannah Shanish was supposed to hook up with him for what was going on here? What was the next step here?
Again, whatever it is, there's obviously a reason why she came and he was supposed to be the handler.
Okay, right? It all fell apart because she was captured.
Right, she was captured
No, right away. It's very interesting because they say she didn't get a lawyer. He didn't get a lawyer. But she was captured in wartime, parachuting behind enemy lines, not in uniform.
Right.
Which means under the Geneva Convention, she could be executed as a spy.
She was.
Not, is not necessarily entitled to
right.
Representation of any
now, color. So that's the story here. That's the story of Chana Senesh and Kastner. There's a lot written in the decision, right? I was unaware of this beforehand, I admit. And there was an awful lot written in the response. This story did not die there, right? Because, oddly enough, in, I think it was 1994, right?
And there's something 1998.
Nine. What? No, the 1999 is when the decision was. Israeli television thought it would be a good idea to make a docudrama based on the Kastner trial. And we could watch, they have it on YouTube now, the scene where Chana Senesh's mother testifies. That actually happened in the Kastner trial. She got up and testified against. Remember, Chana Senesh's mother also was imprisoned, and they were telling Chana Senesh, "You either give us the code, or we're going to kill your mother."
How is she?
That involved? Is a violation of the Geneva Convention.
No, that is.
Yes,
it is. Did she parachute in? How was she involved?
She was in Budapest beforehand. She was there the whole time.
Okay.
Chana Senesh has gotten out. She had gone to Israel. Palestine, now she's coming back.
Got it.
That mother goes and testifies against Kastner. Now, the story is based on the Kastner trial. It is not the actual Kastner trial. And they make it clear from the beginning, not everything here is true. In this go-round, right, they have... In middle of Kastner's, of Chana Senesh's mother's testimony, Kastner jumps up and starts yelling at her. And he says, what are you hacking us? What were you thinking? That three people are going to come in and save a million Jews? You thought this was going to be helpful for us? Right? If anything, you were undermining everything we were supposed to do. You know, and I'm sorry that your daughter was tortured, and I am not blaming her for the fact that she spilled the beans after she was tortured, but at the end of the day, this was all terrible. Now, we all know, whoever knows the Chana Senesh story, the key to the story is that she never spilled the beans.
But he's saying she did.
But this is fiction.
Correct.
This is theater.
Chana Senesh's family sues. That this sues based on libel, that this should never be allowed to be shown.
Oh, what they had.
And that goes to the Supreme Court.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. So the Supreme Court, now in 1999, 40 years later, has the Kastner trial back on its docket in a very different way.
So it had nothing to do with. The Supreme Court, this had nothing to do.
Nope,
with
this is a case of defamation and libel. Unbelievable. So Cardozo was kind enough to translate that decision, so we'll make it easy for you, as you see, right? So he said, the current petition concerns the play The Kastner Trial, written by respondent number 4. The play, based on the true story of the Kastner affair, was intended to be televised. In one of the scenes of the play, one of the characters claims that Chana Senesh broke under interrogation by the Hungarian police and betrayed her comrades. Petitioners, who relatives of Senesh, petitioned this court to prevent the progress of that scene in the play. But here's a claim that the scene contained falsehoods defaming Chana Senesh and injured the feelings of many, including survivors of the Holocaust. Held. For the purpose of the petition, the court assumed that the play with the scene in question defamed Chana Senesh and also injured the feelings of the public in general and that the Holocaust in particular. The court held, however, that in a democratic society, only a near certainty of grave and severe injury of feelings can justify the prior restraint of expression. The court held that the scene in question did not present a near certainty of such injury. As such, the petition was denied. Justice Chashin dissented. Now, in this discussion, they raised the issue of, is there such a thing as a defamation of a dead person? Ends up that the law in Israel over the years has changed about this. And they're right. We see that defamation of the deceased is the subject of the same law of defamation of the living. This is the credo of the law and its message. This is a version of human dignity presented by the defamation law. Defamation of the deceased does not constitute grounds for a civil claim or private criminal complaint, but sealing off the road to the court does not detract from the substantive prohibition against publishing material defamatory of the dead and does not lessen the statutory moral legal condemnation of such defamation. Defamation of the dead does not provide grounds for a civil claim, a claim for damages, an injunction, or a declaratory within the framework of civil law. However, I'm unable to see any good reason why a person should not be able to file suit within the framework of public law. The issue concerns a body of persons subject to public law. The broadcasting authority is indeed exempt from the yoke of private law with respect to defamation of the dead, as is any person or body operating within the realm of private law. However, as a body which is subject to public law, it must be held legally accountable for the parameters. So this is a discussion that comes up, among other things. The fact that Chana Senesh has been gone for over 50 years, does that stop the trial or not? Just to discuss halachically, there's an interesting question of whether or not there's such a thing as lashon hara about a dead person. The Gemara in Brachos seems to say quite clearly that there is no obligation. Amar Rav Yitzchak kol misaper achrei hames ki'ilu misaper achrei ha'evin. If you're speaking about a dead person, it's like talking about a stone. Either the dead people don't know what you're saying, or they don't care what you're saying. Right? Sticks and stones. We say it.
What?
Yes. Well, the question is, how will they be heard? Is that really true? Because they're going to lose a hero?
Well, no, but they might say, that's my grandfather you're talking about, which goes back to what Jesse said. That, in fact,
if we know anything in America, it's just as easy to take off names off of buildings than to put it on in buildings. That's,
why do people do that? They care about
it. Right, but they care about it while they're alive.
Once they're dead, I'm not sure.
Any? Right, is that really true? Well, I'm a rapapa, chadi, shtoy, milsa, basre, de marshmu, benachal, kind of mitalto, abozala, arnaka, de bochia. But then we see that someone spoke about Shmuel after he was dead, and the guy, and all of a sudden a beam fell from the building and cracked his skull. Chang told me, Rabban, the kucha brichu, tava miyakari. So, no, a tamba chacham, God looks out for him. That's different. So it seems in the Gemara that you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara about dead people. The Shulchan Aruch, however, quoted a comment from the Mordechai that says, Takonas kadmoneinu v'cheirim shelo rotzi shem ra'al ha'meisim. There was a takana that you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara about dead people. Interestingly, we have Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Emes LeYaakov, ask an interesting question. Shalti Tamar Echad, Eich Tzorcha Hazbir Mashi Sipra Torah Sipurim Ailu Alache Yosef. How does the Torah got to say the things about the brothers of Yosef that what that they sold him? Gains of a getter Lashon Hara? Isn't this Lashon Hara about the Shvatim?
No.
Okay, that's one answer.
No,
I'll
explain one.
Oh.
There it has a purpose. There's Toalis.
What's the Toalis?
One can learn from that story. Therefore, at that point, it doesn't necessarily.
So again, if I get up here, there's someone here who's been cheating on his wife. So I get up in shul and I say, you know, don't be like so and so. You should all learn that so and so is his wife hates him because he cheats on him, and now you shouldn't either. Right, and then people will know that you should.
Something that was done in a public forum. Meaning the brother was doing their act in a public forum.
Why was it public? Who was there?
That they sold.
Yeah, because they read it in the Chumash. I mean, everybody knew. Yaakov didn't know. Who knew?
It was just among them. It wasn't a
right.
Event.
Yaakov Avinu didn't know. Who knew?
Right. They were aggravated with their little brother.
That's it. That's what happens sometimes. Yeah. Who hasn't been obligated by a younger sibling sometimes? So you sell them, Sean.
I've never had a younger sibling.
It's okay, but your sister tells me she's had the problem.
That's okay. I've had a problem with her.
Okay. So he says, doesn't matter. They're gone. No more Lashon Hara. This idea, Midor Rabbanon, you're not allowed to do it. Midor Raisi, you're out there. And the Achayim is only if it wasn't true. If it's true, you're allowed to say it. Very interesting. I was speaking to Rabbi Daniel Feldman today, a dear friend of mine, and I said, I was discussing this case with him.
Yeah,
came out with the whole thing about this.
He wrote a book on Lashon Hara, which is why I gave him a call to talk about it. He also had other interesting, he always has interesting things to say. And he said the Rav Yashiv disagrees with this. Rav Yashiv in his Ha'aris on Brachos, he holds that it's Aser D'Oraisa to speak about a dead person. I said, what does he do with this Gemara? He said he doesn't know. I looked up this Rav Yashiv and I couldn't find it. I don't think it exists. So I texted him and he said, well, as soon as he gets home, he'll send me the source. I don't have the source yet. However, a potential source to disagree would be number 11. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about the idea of the Mekoshesh. We know that there was an unnamed person who violated Shabbos, and that person was put to death. So the Tanu Rabbanan Mekoshesh Zed Slafchad. Who was the Mekoshesh? Slafchad was the Mekoshesh. Remember, many years ago, so yesterday they had a goodbye party for Rabbi Rakoff. So one time I was actually a scholar in residence by Rabbi Rakoff in Kansas, and then we were discussing Slafchad. And they talk about it. So they said, he was the Mekoshes. Rabbi Kiva says, he proves that it was Slavchad. Same guy who had the five daughters. Right? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beser, Akiva, ben kach bencha, ata asit ritein esadin. Im kvirecha, ata rekisusav, ata magalo also, bim rav, ata motzi razal, also tzadik. So wait a second. There's a reason why the Torah never told you who it was. Now you spilled the beans. Now you just spoke Lashon Hara about Slavchad. What do we know about Slavchad? Among other things we know is he was dead. He was dead.
Because throughout the Torah you have pictures of painting of pictures of stories of things that occur. You have the story of Aaron, Moshe.
Smacking the rock.
No, that.
That's about it. That's all you're going to get out of Moshe.
You have the story of Lashon Hara, right? Or you have
Shlomo HaMelech doesn't look great.
What?
Shlomo doesn't look great.
Right.
No offense.
No, he doesn't.
Namesake.
David doesn't look great.
Hey.
David had his problems. Let's leave it at that.
I'm just saying.
Right. So you know the fact that the Gemara indicates that you can speak Lashon Hara on Slavchad, that would indicate that there is such a thing as defamation against somebody who's dead. We have to, of course, we'll end with the Chafetz Chaim. But gam kin osur. Because of our poskim, the yesh takon of chaim kadmon shlo hotzi raz v'shem ra'al hamesim. V'kol zeh afilu v'hames ama aretz, v'kol shem v'tamu chacham, v'vazo avin pliriyu. They said, get somebody says it's a terrible thing. So, you know, this is even the Gemara sounds that it's not a problem on the level of D'Oraisa. That's questionable, but definitely on the level of D'Rabbanan, there is such a idea that you can have defamation, and that, in fact, follows what the court said. However, the court gives other reasons why, in fact, it decided that the show could go on, and if anybody wants to watch it, that scene in particular is available on YouTube.
But, approximately 15 to 17 years, that's more out there. Making of a guttle. Mm-hmm. And there was a big thing about that because
it's definitely
the
a thing.
Whole storyline basically was trying to paint a picture of that Dolimar human beings as well,